Inside the Food Biz. Welcome and thank you guys for tuning in. I am your co-host Ruben Torres, and today we are sitting with Dieter Heesen. He is the food and beverage consultant over at the Hotel Del, and we're going to kind of take a in-depth look on what goes on behind the scenes at the Hotel Del, and everything has to do with the food and beverage, all the crazy stuff that you don't even think of when you enter a world-class hotel like the Hotel Del. So make sure you guys listen to the whole way through. Make sure you tell your friends, subscribe, rate, and review, and share it. You know, let people know what we're doing. If you feel that anybody is a good fit for the show, make sure you reach out, let them know, let us know, and let's connect and make this happen. And so let's get into this. This episode is brought to you by Savor Catering. We are recording here at the Savor Catering facilities. So you got any food and beverage needs, make sure you reach out to us. Savor Catering, savorcater.com. Give us a call. Let us know if we can help you with anything, whether you're having any kind of corporate party, wedding, quinceañera, anything. We are here to help. Any party is as small as 2 and as large as 10,000. So reach out, let us know here at Savor Catering. Let's go ahead and get into this. Here's your host, Eric Rimmola.
You're listening to Inside the Food Biz Podcast, where we bring you insightful culinary conversations with today's leading food biz professionals. And here's your host, Eric Rimmola.
Welcome, our listeners, to Inside the Showbiz with Eric Rimmola.
This one is Inside the Food Biz. We'll save the Inside the Show Biz for the next one.
Okay, so Inside the Food Biz.
We'll do the show biz on the next one.
Oh, God. With my co-host Ruben Torres and today's guest, Mr. Dieter Heesen, who is the food and beverage consultant for the Hotel Del Coronado. So that's not exactly the smallest hotel here on the West Coast, is it, Dieter?
No, it is quite a bit of operation. And it's a little bit of bigger hotel. I think you're not going to find anything of that size anywhere outside of Las Vegas for the most part. So it's an exciting property, nice property. A lot of depth to it, a lot of fun, a lot of history.
Yeah. Well, for people which don't know where the Hotel Del is, or even maybe never heard about it, you should really Google it. For some movie buffs, you know, some like it hot, what's actually filmed there. I know it's already a while back, but, you know, it's one of those movies that you should have watched.
Yeah.
And, you know, Marilyn Monroe fans, I mean, they saw that when it was Marilyn Monroe, Tony Curtis, Jack Lemmon.
There's a lot of history with the Hollywood crowd, I guess, especially out of that time period and 50s and 60s, actually even earlier than that, you know, the hotel is there since 1888, so yeah. It has a tremendous amount of history, and there's a lot of, we had actually a fun little tidbit, we had a movie night last week with, I can't remember the movie, anyways, the movie was written at a hotel.
It will come back to you.
So there's a lot of history from, you know, from things that that happened at that property.
That is true.
I heard one, maybe it's just one of those Hollywood things, but I heard one of those rooms in there, it was like one of those haunted rooms that everybody kind of goes through every Halloween to go check out. Part of the history?
There is a history like that, and there is a little bit of a story of a haunting, I guess. There was a lady that checked in the early days of the hotel, and she was supposed to, I guess, meet someone there, and that someone never showed up, and apparently out of her sorrow, she committed suicide that night. So she checked in, but she never checked out, and it's being said, her name is Kate Morgan, it's being said that her ghost is still haunting the property. I have not met her yet. Looking forward if it happens, but we don't do a showing of the room or anything in that direction.
Does that room still rent out?
It is actually renumbered, so there is some information on the internet which number it is, but it actually is not. So because it would be, you know, you don't want to have people go up and knock on the door and all that, you know, when somebody stays there. So we need renumber the rooms, and I don't even know which one it is, to be perfectly honest with you.
That happens.
But it's a fun little story. It's a fun little story around it.
And most of the presidents, when they come to San Diego, they stay at the Hotel Del, right?
There is a lot of history with some of the past presidents for many years from that have stayed at the hotel, and celebrities, like I said, just anyone and anybody has been in the Dell. And it's such a landmark. It's been, I think you can go anywhere in the United States and you just show the picture and people probably can associate it with it somewhere. That it's, and it's your quintessential, California beach resort. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I mean, it's a, like I said, very iconic property.
So Dieter, obviously, you have a, similar accent as I have.
True.
So, true. And for people which don't know, Dieter is actually from Germany, and like me, I ended up, here in Southern California. But tell us a little bit, of your way into the hotel business.
I was born in the business. My parents have a little hotel in the Black Forest area, so I somewhat was destined to end up in the business. And I started cooking first. I worked at a one Michelin star restaurant in a little town called Freiburg, which is outside of, which is in the Black Forest area, southern part of Germany. And then worked in a number of hotels throughout Europe, and for Kempinski Hotels in Frankfurt. And then went to a hotel business school in Heidelberg for 2 years. And had the idea to work up abroad somewhere, and I ended up working for Ritz-Carlton here in the United States, and Laguna Niguel here in Orange County, and then opened the Ritz-Carlton for them in Hong Kong and traveled a little bit around. Then I ended up at a hotel in Newport Beach at the Balboa Bay Resort, Balboa Bay Club and Resort, and I was there actually for about 18 years, so kind of went through the ranks from restaurant manager all the way up to GM at some point, and then moved to another hotel in Newport Beach as a GM, the Island Hotel, for some time, and then started consulting about a year and a half ago, and that's what brought me to the Hotel Del. So it's a great business. It's fun. I guess started in the back of the house, moved to the front of the house, and it's exciting. There's never one day like the other. It's not like going to the office and it's boring. It's you can write books after a while about this business. That's for sure.
Never one who's going to write books.
Right, I love it. We're just talking about that.
Are you writing? You wrote a book.
Yesterday we were just making a little fun about that because Ruben wants me to write a book.
I'm trying to get a book out of him. I think he has enough knowledge to get a book, to put a book out. So I'm trying to get it out of him.
It's a great thing to do, because you put down your a little bit of your legacy. You put down your
We'll see. Now that we have someone who will actually
transcribe
it. So maybe
some volunteers to transcribe.
We'll see.
It's a lot of work.
They sweetened up the deal a little bit, though.
So, Dieter, being a food and beverage consultant, that's not necessarily your usual, job within the hotel business.
True, to a certain degree. I mean, the interesting part of it is you see a lot of different operations. If you start working at one hotel or one restaurant or so, you kind of, you start an employment, you kind of locked in to be there for a year, 2 years, 3 years, however long you're going to stay there. If you work more on a consultant basis, I think you see more things. It's more diverse. You might have a client that has a restaurant. You might have a hotel like I have right now in the food and beverage division that's very large. Or it's just very diverse. It gives you a new challenge all the time. So it's an interesting journey. But you always have to look for new business or for something else to do. You cannot stand still. But it's like I said, it was challenging, interesting, and rewarding. Truly. But you to a certain degree, you bring all your experience with you, whether that be for the hotel, or for the front of the house, for the back of the house. If it's the culinary part or the sales aspect of it, it's you really have to dig deep in all your experiences that you have if you work as a consultant, because you never know really what the task is that you have to do. Mm-hmm. And so interesting part of the business, definitely.
So for someone like me that doesn't know much of that aspect of it, can you explain what the consultant of food and beverage does?
Yeah. Well, sometimes you analyze a some object, basically. I had one client that looked at perhaps going into one or two objects or restaurants, and he wanted to find out what my opinion is. So you just do an assessment of if you think that investment would be a good investment, and you give your recommendation if what menu you would think would work, what price points would work at a restaurant like that. You look a little bit at the history of the restaurant. Has it been like a restaurant that has been for 20 years in the same family, and now you come in as an outside investor and you might not have that family flair with it, and perhaps it might not work in the neighborhood. So you have to look at many things from the dynamics of the area, from the city where it is, from the location and the history of, you know. We know that restaurant business is tough. There's many, most of the restaurants that are going into business after 5 years. I think the failure quote is 95% of restaurants going out of business in less than 5 years. Yeah. Because a lot of people think it's so easy to open a restaurant. It actually is very complicated, very difficult. Yes. And you have to look at all sorts of aspects. But in a lot of times, it's like I said, if you look at a restaurant's history and it had six different owners in the last 8 years or something, there might be quite a big of a challenge to get traction with whatever kind of kitchen or whatever kind of culinary product you want to put out. If it better that be a bar, if it's an Italian style restaurant, if it's Mediterranean, whatever it might be, it's an expensive business too, because you have a lot of labor involved in, and that's your biggest part of your labor in terms of kitchen and front of the house labor. So it's a very romantic, great, exciting business, but unless you know what you're doing, you're probably very much destined to fail in terms of the financial end of it, because it's tough to make a successful operation. If you have the knowledge, you can, but just going in and thinking it's like, oh, it's great business, it's easy to be a restaurant, you know, open a restaurant, you get a good chef, you get a few waiters, you buy some wines and beers, and you open up the place. It's not that easy.
It's funny, Ruben. I mean, this is really something I think for you now, which is crystallizing, you know, through all the discussions we've been having. You know, it's that romanticism that people have with the restaurant business, and you know, many, speaking about Hollywood, but many Hollywood stars have tried, you know,
absolutely,
fully unsuccessfully, you know, to have restaurants or restaurant chains. It's just hard, you know, but very often, you know, people which go to restaurants, they have a certain picture of it, and they say, hey, if I would have a restaurant, I would do this, I would do that, and so on. Unfortunately, most of the time, it's not about them, but it's about your clients. So your idea might sound really great, and maybe you have a million or two spare, you know, lying around, and you just go for it, and then after a couple of weeks, you know, you're like, oh my God, you were full the first night, maybe the second night, and then people just start to fizzle out.
It's usually restaurants are, you know, the new place everybody goes to and tries it out, but you have to back it up with your product and with your service in order for guests to come back, because there's a lot of you go to one time, and if you don't get what you like, and if it's too expensive, whatever the problem, you're not going to go back. But if you enjoy if there's an atmosphere that's created, that's great, and if the food is good and the service is good, then you might be inclined to go back there many times over, and that's what you have to create. But it's not easy. You know, in many businesses, there's a saying that, you know, if you want to make a small fortune in the restaurant business, you know, take a big fortune and buy a restaurant, and you end up with a small fortune at the end. But there's many, many businesses like that. You know, it's the same with the wine business. If you know, the same romances for if you have the financial means to buy a winery or something, you know, it's great, but growing the wine and putting it in the barrel and then putting it in the bottle is easy, but selling it, you know, you got to find somebody that likes your wine. So it's the same
marketing.
Same thing with the restaurant business. It's marketing, it's quality that you have to back up what you do.
Yeah, it can't be easy. We talk about it all the time, like everybody wanting to open up a restaurant, everybody wanting to have a restaurant, and Eric's like, nope, I don't want to do a restaurant. He's always like, nope.
You know, no restaurant. Catering, yes. Yeah. Restaurant, I really leave it gladly for the others.
I
prefer to go. I prefer to go to the restaurant, enjoy it. But running it, you know, I had the opportunity to run a couple of restaurants, and it's very hard work.
It's a lot of work, a lot of hard work, a lot of work, and it's you work the weekends and the holidays. But you know what? If you like it, I know, you know, if you have the passion for something, it's you automatically good. I mean, I have new employees when I talk to new hires. So if we do an orientation with some new staff that comes in, I always tell them it's like you gotta love this business. If you don't love it, if you don't like to smile, if you don't like to serve as guests, then you might be in the wrong place, and you might want to make your decision right now and leave, because it's not, we're not looking for someone that you know, it's not a 9-to-5 job, and some parts of it are, but like if you work in a restaurant, you got to be there at night, you got to be in the evening, you close late in the evening, but it's fun, it's exciting, it's a lot of energy in restaurants, and that's the part that keeps me always there. You know, sometimes you look around and say, why are you doing this? Business?
Exactly, why are you doing this? Yeah. You know, it's really, you know, 24/7, 365 days a year. And especially in a resort, say, like the Hotel Del, you know, there's no downtime.
But it's fun.
Well, of course it's fun.
It's fun. It's fun. There's always something going on. There's always, you have new guests, you have new challenges, you have, and the fun part is, too, you work with food and beverage. You know, you try new wines, you try different foods, you have chefs that are very talented, and they have ideas, and you dream up stuff, and there is no limitations to it. So it's a very creative business. It's a dynamic business. It's fun to speak with guests. I mean, there's no boring. Think about it. I couldn't sit in front of the computer for 8 hours a day and do like data input or be on a call center or something. I would do it, but I wouldn't enjoy it. Mm-hmm. But I love to walk in a restaurant, and as crazy as it sounds, if the restaurant is really busy and there's a lot of stuff going on, that's the energy that's in there. That's the fun part that's in there. Yeah. You walk in a ballroom, there's a group that has a lot of fun. That's great. You know, to make other people happy is kind of the satisfaction that you seek if you work in this business, and that's the fun part. If you put something on a plate that tastes good and the guest says, you know, it's the best, you know, steak or whatever it might be, pasta or soup or whatever it might be, it's simple things that I ever had or enjoyed it, really, that's a satisfaction that you like to have. It's like being a host that you have somebody come into your house. You want to impress them, you want to make sure it's clean, you want to give them, you know, the best food that you have and the best wine that you have and the best drinks that you have. And that's a business that we do every day, and that's why we love it. Yeah. Nice. It's good fun. It's fun stuff.
Where does that restaurant, I mean, that hotel fall in is with some of the other resorts here in San Diego? Is that like top of the top, or is there better hotel? I mean, you know, as far as the rating goes.
You know, I think the Hotel Del has a very special place, because just for one, the history that it is, it's 128 years old. It has, I think, the service levels are as good as any other hotel that's in the 4 to 5 star level. The quality of the food is excellent, and we have a lot of different things going on. We have 13 different food and beverage outlets besides all the banquet staff that we have. So we have a fine dining restaurant, which is 1500 Ocean, and we have a bit more casual three-meal restaurant, which is called Shearwater. We have a pizza-style restaurant for salads, pizza, and some nice wines and artisanal cheese plates and so on and so forth, which is Eno Steakhouse, or Eno Wine Bar, I want to say, not Steakhouse. And then we have a Sun Deck and Bar, which is a very large outdoor area where we have a little bit of a, like a Mexican concept in terms of like the food that we serve, and as it's outdoors, it's, you know, it's overlooking the ocean. The location is you cannot beat it. I mean, you have a very large, beach right in front of you. It's like I said, it's California at its best, so to speak. And you have a lot of history. So I kind of keep, you know, having conversations with guests, and they, for a lot of them, the Hotel Del has so much, they have memories from there, that there's so much history there, or they go there because they just like to enjoy that part of history that you don't get anywhere else, you know. Right. There's hotels out there that are beautiful, that are brand new, and they just don't have the character that the Hotel Del has. It's a very special place, and I think it's backed up the quality of the food and services, and the guest service quality is there as well. The only thing there is, it's a little bit of an old hotel. So when you walk on the fourth floor, you know, you're not on a concrete building. This is a building that was built 128 years ago. There might be a little creaky noise on the floor, you know, because it's just, that's what it is. But like I said, so many guests that I have spoken to have, or the conversations with, they have said, it's just what it is. It's, you know, and somewhere else we wouldn't like it, but here it's just part of the experience.
Yeah. And then just the character.
Just the grandeur of the entire hotel. I mean, I don't know if you have had brunch at the Hotel Del. So we have a brunch in the Crown Room, and the Crown Room is one room that has, I believe, the ceiling 38 feet high. It's all wooden. A wooden structure, and there's not one nail that's in that wooden structure to hold it up. It's all kind of interlinked, a wood construction that has been done 128 years ago. So it's just a, you know, for someone that is interested in that part of, you know, even architecture, it just has so much to give and so much to look at. So, it, like I said, it's a very special place. It's you don't have it anywhere else.
That's awesome.
It's also the largest still existing wooden structure in America.
Yeah, I believe so.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Well, I just actually, it was funny because we just did a tour with the South County DC of the Hotel Dell, and it was very interesting because we also got behind the scenes work, and we went where the maintenance department is, and there's a tunnel connecting the maintenance department and the Hotel Dell, and it's just interesting, you know, to walk through it. It's like, oh wow, this kind of cool, and you still have like the original electric lines from 128 years ago?
120 years, yeah.
Which run there, of course. They're not functional anymore, but just seeing that, it's pretty cool. It's impressive, and there are a lot of, you know, just artifacts and, you know, stuff from the times, so...
Every year you turn, there's a little story behind it, you know, it's a fun part. Yeah. I just kind of look back, I see the old pictures of the Hotel Dell, and if you really think about it, so it was built in 1888. You stand in the driveway where we have a porte cochere where all the, you know, all the you know, cars are being parked now in the valet area. Yeah. If you think about it, you call it porte cochere because it actually had it used to be where the horse-driven carriages came in, and in this hotel actually there are pictures with, you know, with all the horse-driven carriages because when it was built there were no cars.
Yeah.
You know? If you think back, you know, if you kind of put yourself into that mindset and how that. You know, who walked through the doors of that hotel over the 128 years of history. So that's like I said, makes it very special. I'm excited to be there, to be honest with you.
That's great.
Yeah.
No, and it's just, you know, the beach is, it's just nice.
Yeah, all of it.
The only problem that we have in San Diego, you know, the water is cold. But for the rest, it's really, really nice.
It's not that cold. I was in the water around over the holiday weekend. My son was here, and we went out in the waves. It's actually get pretty good now.
It's pretty good.
But 3 weeks ago was cold. But these last few days of I don't think it's that cold. You can stay out there without a wetsuit.
That's good.
Yeah. You gotta go out, Eric. You gotta get out there once in a while.
Get him out there.
Yeah, shouldn't I?
He was saying he's gonna start working on his the Speedo body again, so you can.
Okay, that might be taking it a little far.
yeah, a little far or a little long.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, my men boobs, I know.
Get up in the Speedo again. Back to that. So what would you be doing if you weren't in the hotel food and beverage industry?
You know, I don't know. Something creative, I think. I would be somehow, if it would be architecture or something where you build, where you create something, where you do something that is, you know, that we have to use your imagination or your talents to do something that's not repetitive. You know, I just don't like too much of repetitiveness, so to speak. It gets boring. For me, it gets boring very, very quickly. So, I don't know. There's a lot of different things out there, but I think I could sell something, I guess. I could be in sales. I don't know if I like that too much, but you know, just creativity somehow. Yeah. If that be, and for certain things, you have to have talent, I guess. You know, if you see creativity, you gotta, you know, if you want to paint something or draw something, but. If you work in the hotel business, the restaurant business, and I was a chef I was a cook. I think the term chef has been way overused because everybody that puts a white coat on calls themselves a chef, and they're not chefs. I think a chef is something that has to be earned, and it takes a while to get there. And to head a kitchen, that's a chef. I was a cook for about 7 years, but I cooked in a very nice restaurant, and that is a very creative. That's probably one of the most creative jobs that you can have. Mm-hmm. Being a cook, not necessarily in a burger joint or something because that's repetitive. But being in a very high end restaurant where you come up with new menus, you know, on a very frequent basis, and you even your product that you have changes as you use it. You know, your herbs taste different if you have them for a couple of days, or if they're very fresh. So you have to adjust what you do in order to get the same results, or whatever it might be. You know, even if it's some of your vegetables are different. So it's a challenging job, and you have to have the creativity to it because the way you arrange a plate and what you put together is all kind of like it needs to incorporate it. Even if you want to pay, you know, paired with a wine or something. These are the fun things, you know. Mm-hmm. Now you start having certain food items, and you try to have certain wine profiles called grape varietals that you want to pair with that. And there's so much, like, it's never ending, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And if you figure it all out for the French cuisine, and with California wines or something, then you got to go, you know, to Asia or to Europe or some of these ethnic cuisines in Middle East or in the Far East, and the food world never ends. I mean, there's just, it's so exciting, and there's so much new stuff to try. And actually, it's so fun to see some of these shows that are on TV. You know, from Anthony Bourdain to to Weird Foods or whatever. There's all these shows out there.
Bizarre foods.
I mean, it's just there's stuff that, I mean, to tell you the truth, I watch it occasionally. I'm in this business for a long time, and I see stuff. It's like, that I haven't seen. I mean, a lot of it I know, but there are some certain things that, you know, you just only get exposed if you go to that country or that city or something. But it's tremendously exciting to see it, and this whole development that has gone on in the United States, here in California in particular, but even all over the United States, with, you know, food development and the awareness of great foods, it's amazing. I mean, I enjoy it tremendously. It's, you know, all the craft cocktails, the great beers that we have here, the coffee, the bread, all these things that we haven't had 20 years ago, and 25 years ago, it's great. You know, I mean, I remember coming out. I came in 92. That's when I arrived here in the U.S. and I mean, been here ever since. And you know, coffee, there was no Starbucks at that point. I mean, so coffee, we still looked at coffee at that point here in the United States as really something that other people would say it's just dirty water with in a cup, you know. And then and then Starbucks came around, and now you have all these just coffee roasters. And then you had Wonder Bread was one, you know. And then you had La Brea Bakery come around, and Sandy Rose Baking Company, and all these traditional bakers that now do wonderful breads, you know, that you get now in every supermarket. I mean, it's just the cheeses, all these kind of things. I mean, it's amazing how far we have come here in the U.S. and it's, I think we're going to bypass a lot of like the other nations because they're so stuck in their own ways that they don't really try other things. And I think our food culture here in another few years is going to be surpassing, I think, from variety and from interest, in many other countries, I believe. Hmm. You know, because we're more open to try out new things, versus when you grow up.
Yeah, but the thing is that, like you said, it only started, you know, like 15 years back, because before, I mean, here people were very stuck in their ways, you know. It was really the meat and potato industry, you know.
Richard?
Why did steakhouse be so, why were they so successful here? That was their fine dining.
And it's, you know, the thing is still, it's still, one, you know, still great. A great steak is still
It's still great. I mean, I personally, of course, I mean, I love a good steak, but it's just nice to see that people are being creative.
Yeah.
Except, you know, from time to time, I maybe see a little too much short rib on the menus.
That's a very popular way. You know, that's an easy one that everybody can do. That's something that is that takes a little bit of skill, but you cannot really butcher it too much.
No,
but there's a lot of other dishes out there that take some cooking and that takes a few hours to do that are great, you know. But it's you know, it's a good development all around. You know.
So what trends do you see right now?
You know, on the let's take it on like the things that I like, that I enjoy seeing is all the craze about new cocktails and really artisanal cocktails. You know, it has started a few years back, but it's getting a little bit more mainstream, that the bartender is not really going just to be the guy that pours a wine or a beer, or maybe a vodka, you know, gin tonic or something like that, but they actually have fresh ingredients behind the bar. They do their own chooses. A lot of them do their own bitters that they do, and or they marinate their own onions or whatever it might be, in order to create their own drinks. And I think that's a great. It's like going to, you know, you go to a bar and you order a Manhattan. You might expect the same Manhattan in every restaurant, but if you go to a restaurant, you buy a you order a burger, and you know every burger is going to be different because every chef is going to put a little something different on it. Well, so if you order a Manhattan, you might have different bitters in that Manhattan or something that might give it a little spin. I don't call it Manhattan anymore, we might call it something else. But see, I think there's a lot of just development that is great, especially when it comes to like some of the juices, some of the things that they use these days. So that's I think is a great development. You know, just the cooking that requires a little bit more skill. Say if you have some of the European dishes that are, there's some restaurants up in I've been only about 2 months in San Diego, so I don't know as much about a San Diego area in terms of restaurant world. I'm kind of starting to explore a little bit, but I'm tied up pretty much at a hotel quite a bit at the moment. But yeah, there's some restaurants. There's, for example, one up in Orange County, which is called Marché Moderne. It's in South Coast Plaza, and it's a French chef that cooks a lot of like really traditional French things. I mean, you get something like, for example, the Haas and Pfeffer, you know, like which is a rabbit dish, basically, that is, the sauce is actually thickened with blood. That's the original recipe, you know, and with fresh blood. So you get some pig's blood or whatever, ideally rabbit, but that's typically hard to get. But these are very traditional dishes. Or you have, like, the boudin noir, which is like a blood sausage. Well, I'm not going to talk only about blood, but there's other things they always do.
So they have it up there?
They have it up there.
Ooh, and, I have to go.
Some really great...
You know, can't do it with the French cuisine.
So Ruben is like, what the... What are you talking about?
Blood.
Yeah. You know, you bloody don't know, but you know, our fangs disappeared over the years because we didn't have to suck people dry anymore.
Okay. I believe that.
Never looked at it that way, but you might be right. But you know, there's other things like slow. Slow cooking, I think, is such a great way of preparing things, and I like some of the. There's some great Mexican food down here, and I think the Mexican food is evolving so much that it's been taken by a lot of young Mexican chefs to a whole new level where they have some influences from different cooking styles, but still have traditional Mexican food. And I think there's a lot of great dishes coming out. I mean, I think in Tiche there's a bunch of good chefs, and if you go a little further south and. The whole Baja California has so much good items.
Yeah, and the Valley like Guadalupe, I mean. Oh, yeah. And it's funny, when people very often, I mean, especially here on this side of the border, you know, they think tacos, burritos, and. But nice Mexican food is not about tacos and burritos and refried beans. Yeah. It's really about, they had farm to table before they had it here.
Well, yeah, no, true. Yeah, we just didn't call it that way. We just made a marketing thing out of it.
Exactly. But it's true. I remember going to the Valle de la Guadalupe, especially a restaurant called Laja, which is still existing. And Javier, the owner, he would only cook with local ingredients. I mean, there could be one day, there could be goat. Then when they had tunas, it would be tuna. And incredible, you know, just you would get a menu du jour. So you would either choose 4 courses or 8 courses. Yeah. And it's about, I think, like $58 for 8 courses. You know, it's still a steal. And local wines. And you're totally, you know, you feel actually, especially when you go to Laja, you feel actually like you're in the Sierra Nevada, but in Spain. You know, you're totally transported to another place. I mean, it's fascinating. And then they have so many new restaurants in the Valle de la Guadalupe. It's astonishing, and people drive there, and I'm actually very happy for them that people now go. You know, we were like explorers, you know, before, but now people really take the car, they drive down, and, you know, if I'm we tell our listeners, you know, and on the way down, stop at Las Rocas, have a couple of margaritas, and then continue. That sets the tone. Yeah. And Las Rocas is just nice because you can be there, you know, you stand on the cliffs, and they do a killer margarita, especially at 10 in the morning.
That's about the right time to start.
I've heard good things about that place.
You know, I went to the... Padres game the other day, and we took an Uber because it was just made sense to take Uber, and there was a girl that drove us. She actually lives in Ensenada,
that side, Ensenada.
So she lives down south, but she comes up here to drive for Uber, and she said often enough she drives actually to. She has guests that she or like hotel. She has a couple of concierges to call her, and then she has the private driver for some. Guests to take him into some of the different restaurants in like the Baja.
Yeah.
Within about, you know, 50, 60, 80 miles down. Wow. And then back, and just a whole day trip out of it with them. And, because people that don't know their way around, they don't feel comfortable maybe driving their own car. And then you drink anyways, and you have a little fun. So she's private driver for some of them. She said it's great. People have a lot of fun doing that, and she knows all the restaurants. I got her phone number, so I might have to do that one day.
Yeah, well, let me know when I'm game.
Yeah, we might have to do that.
I'm game because you know it's so much fun, and it's true. I mean, San Diego is a border town, and it's so nice that we can just cross to the other side and explore. And some people are concerned about gang violence and I don't know, even at the height of what was going on in Mexico, I was still going over. You just know where not to go.
Yeah, exactly. The thing is, if you're like a tourist from somewhere else, maybe from outside, maybe outside the United States, obviously we have a lot of tourists, especially at Hotel Del and anywhere in San Diego. Yeah, you might want to take the safe route and not even have to worry about it. Somebody that drives you around.
But if you go and you look at the statistics about how many people are murdered, etc. I don't like to bring that one up, but Tijuana is safer than Detroit. Mm-hmm.
True.
I would probably agree with that.
And so it's sometimes, and here it's easy to find people which. No TJ, and go down to Rosarito and all the way down to Encinita. And it's on top of that, it's a very nice drive.
Yeah.
It's not Highway 1, but
yeah, no,
101. It's still a super drive. And what I like is you feel really like another country.
Yeah.
It's not like if you cross state lines, it's really, whoa.
Oh, yeah.
True. You have different. It looks different. It feels different. You have different smells. You have different language. You hear everything else different. You see it just. And you see different things. I mean, you know that you're in a different country. That's true. But like I said, it has come a long way when it comes on the food side, and there's a lot of good stuff to explore on the other side of the border. That's for sure.
Yeah.
On this side of the border too.
Also, before we go, we have someone here on Facebook Live. I believe it's Alex. Alex Dwellen. He says, Eric, you have a great broadcast here, and he would one day like to meet your friend.
Dieter.
I think Alex plays the guitar, I believe, and he's a musician, but he's saying one day he'd like to meet Dieter.
Right, absolutely.
So... He's a fan of the broadcast.
Got to get a hold of Eric, and he knows how to get a hold of me.
Exactly. Yeah, I know where you are.
So there you go, Alex, if you can hear us. But just wanted to address that because I know you had asked that a little bit ago. But that's the beauty of being on Facebook Live. People get to interact. That's great.
Yeah, awesome.
Yeah, that's good. And now, just for our listeners, like you said, we've been recording a lot of shows, and we're very soon we're going to push them out
on iTunes. They'll be on iTunes real soon.
Yeah, and so you will be able to listen to it again and again, till you get bored out of your mind. But anyway, we're going to go to a more regular schedule then, and generally we will be on air. And do our podcast recording, and then of course our Facebook live stream every first day at 4:00. Except of course the first exception is already next time, because it's going to be on Wednesday, July
13th.
We are going to have the owners of Sweet Cheeks. Yes, and there's a left cheek and a right cheek.
Ouch.
Which cheeks are you talking about?
Well,
we'll see.
That's and they have actually a great following, on Facebook, and they are a great baking company here in San Diego.
Yeah,
okay. Yeah, they've been about 9 years in business, and they are just fun to be around and learning about their backgrounds. They have very interesting backgrounds, so I hope I'm going to. See you. We hope we're going to have a good show for you then on July 13th with Sweet Cheeks. And Dieter, thank you so much for coming.
Eric, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Again, we're getting another call.
Yeah, I know my wife loves to do that. You know, she calls, you know, always, you know, during
everything.
Yeah, but that's okay. So I know she's not on Facebook all the time.
Yeah. Unless that's why she's calling, because she's on Facebook. She's like, what are you doing?
What am I doing?
But thank you for coming by and hanging out with us for a little bit.
Yeah, appreciate it.
Eric usually does a wine of the week. And what was today's?
Well, today is actually, we went back to the hot scotch, you know, 2011 Chardonnay. But if you haven't listened to the last recording, it's a Chardonnay, California Chardonnay. And it was actually aged for 8 months in French oak. And that gives us a nice little oaky taste. I'm not necessarily a fan of buttery Chardonnays, but this one is just buttery enough that it's not overwhelming.
Yeah, there's a lot of Chardonnay. Well, I think with the wine there's getting a little bit away from the really heavy buttery and oaky style, I think, is a good development, because it pairs much nicer with the food. It doesn't overwhelm. But this one is very nice. It's not as strong. It's not as, you don't feel like you biting in a stick of butter that has a bit of, yeah.
And this is maybe, I'm just picking up on that, because, you know, European wines, where we're actually meant to be drunk with food. That's where the whole pairing actually came in, and California wines mostly developed in a different direction. It was more like, I drink the wine by myself, I enjoy it. And sometimes these wines are very overwhelming, and they are hard to pair with food. Because if you have a very accentuated wine, you have to have very bold food on the other side. But that sometimes takes away from the suddenness, you know, subtleness of the food.
Yeah, you got a little bit of too much going on in your mouth if you have like a very big wine that now you have to pair with a very, you know, big food, so to speak, strong food, big flavors and all that, and it's almost overwhelming, and you have a good chance to miss it. Let me say it that way, in terms of like that it doesn't work together, because it's just too much of a diversity of flavors that you have to experience. It's like, you know, going into buying a perfume for your wife or something. You smell 3-4 different perfumes, and you're not going to smell any more much differences after that, because it's too much. It's too overwhelming for your sensory ability. Mm-hmm. And it's the same when it comes to food. It's I think keeping it a little bit on the lower end, and not lower end necessarily with flavors, but just nicely developed flavors, but not overwhelming flavors, I think is more of a way to go, where you have finesse versus power, you know, in terms of wines as well as food.
Nice. Good. Well, I think that's a very nice way of ending.
There you have it.
Today's show.
And so, how do we find you if anybody has any questions, or if anybody is maybe intrigued with that industry and they may have questions, or how does anybody find you?
Well, they can find me through Eric.
Do you maybe have an email address you could share?
I got an email. It's just my first initial last name, so it's dhissen at hoteldale.com.
Maybe you want to spell that one.
It's dhissin at hoteldale.com.
There you have it.
Well, NT already has his own email address with them.
That's awesome.
Well, you know, I got the first day. When you start, you're gonna, you know, everybody tries to make sure they can get a hold of you, and they do.
Yeah.
That's how it's all good.
Dieter, so thank you very much for being on the show, and
thank you.
And we are done with another episode of Inside the Food Biz. We'll save the inside the show biz for the next one. But
thank you
everybody for tuning in. Make sure you subscribe, rate and review, and you know, share it around, that people know what we're doing. If you have anybody that you think may be a good fit for the show, go ahead and give us a shout out, like reach out to us, let us know. We'd love to learn all aspects of the food business here. So anybody, whether you're a brewer, coffee shop, a sandwich owner, anything, we want to learn all the insides of it. So reach out to us, and make sure you share the episodes, because we're trying to get deep inside the food biz. So there you have it. Thank you guys for listening. Make sure you spread the word. And we are out until next week.